Dawes' arms were bound behind her back, and Mr. Vandemar walked behind her, one huge beringed hand resting on her shoulder, pushing her along. Mr. Croup scuttled on ahead of them, holding the obsidian talisman he had taken from her on high and peering edgily from side to side like a particularly pompous weasel on its way to raid the henhouse. The labyrinth itself was a place of pure madness. It was built of lost fragments of London above, alleys and roads and corridors and sewers that had fallen through the cracks over the millennia and entered the world of the lost and the forgotten. The two men and the girl walked over cobbles and through mud and through dung of various kinds and over rotting wooden boards. They walked through daylight and night, through gas-lit streets and sodium-lit streets and streets lit with burning rushes and links. It was an ever-changing place, and each path divided and circled and doubled back on itself. Mr. Croup felt the tug of the talisman, and let it take him where it wanted to go. They walked down a tiny alleyway, which had once been part of a Victorian rookery, a slum comprised in equal parts of theft and penny gin, of tuppenny halfpenny squalor and threepenny sex. And they heard it, snuffling and snorting somewhere nearby. And then it bellowed, deep and dark. Mr. Croup hesitated before hurrying forward up a short wooden staircase, and then, at the end of the alley, he stopped, squinting about him before he led them down some steps into a long stone tunnel that had once run across the Fleet Marshes in the Templars' time. Dawes said, "You're afraid, aren't you?" He glared at her. "Hush your tongue." She smiled, although she did not feel like smiling. "You're scared that your safe conduct token won't get you past the beast. What are you planning now? To kidnap Islington? Sell both of us to the highest bidder?"
"Quiet," said Mr. Vandemar.
But Mr. Croup simply chuckled, and Dawes knew then that the Angel Islington was not her friend. She began to shout, "Hey, Beast, we're over here! Yoo-hoo, Mr. Beast!" Mr. Vandemar cuffed her head and knocked her against the wall.
"Said to be quiet," he told her calmly.
She tasted blood in her mouth and spat scarlet on the mud. Then she opened her mouth to begin shouting once more. Mr. Vandemar, anticipating this, had taken a handkerchief from his pocket and forced it into her mouth. She tried to bite his thumb as he did so, but it made no appreciable impression on him.
"Now you'll be quiet," he told her.
Mr. Vandemar was very proud of his handkerchief, which was spattered with green and brown and black and had originally belonged to a rather overweight snuff dealer in the 1820s, who had died of apoplexy and been buried with his handkerchief in his pocket. Mr. Vandemar still occasionally found fragments of snuff merchant in it, but it was, he felt, a fine handkerchief for all that. They continued in silence. In its rock hall, at the end of the labyrinth, which was its citadel and its prison, the Angel Islington was doing something it had not done in many thousands of years. It was singing. It had a beautiful voice, melodious and sweet. Like all angels, it had perfect pitch. Islington was singing a song by Irving Berlin, and it danced gracefully as it sang, executing slow and flawless moves and steps in its great hall filled with candles. "Heaven," sang the angel. "I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak." It ceased to dance when it reached the black door in its chamber, the door made of flint and tarnished silver. It ran its fingers slowly over the surface of the door, pressed its cheek to the door's cold surface, and it continued more quietly to sing, "Heaven, I'm in heaven, I'm in heaven, I'm in heaven." And then it smiled, gently and sweetly, and the smile of the angel Islington was a monstrous thing to behold. It spoke the words then to itself, repeating them over and over, the syllables hanging bleakly in the air in the candlelit darkness of its chamber. "I'm in heaven," it said.